Welcome to Nerds by Nature. You are being rescued. Please do not resist. I'm Brian. These are my co-rebels, Brayden.
Hello.
Josh.
What's up?
And Seth.
Hi.
Today we are discussing one of the best Star Wars movies, in my opinion, Rogue One. So, at least for me, I was like, what, 14 when this movie released in theaters?
We all saw it together, didn't we?
Us two saw it together.
That's right.
We had not met these two yet.
Not even close.
Oh, that's true. I forgot.
I remember when I first heard about it, I was like, they're making a movie about the Death Star plans? I thought it was going to be terrible, in all honesty.
I was hyped.
The trailers got me a little bit more, okay, maybe this could be like an okay use of 2 hours. And then I went and I saw it in theaters. And I left the theater. I was like, holy frick, that was good. This movie, at least for me, had exceeded all expectations. It is actually my favorite movie of all time.
It's probably pretty close to that for me as well. Though my first experience with it was a bit different. Me and my family were heading to California on a plane, and it was one of the options. And I was like, I haven't seen it yet. I may as well watch it. And I didn't finish it. I actually left with like 30 minutes left.
The last 30 minutes are the best part.
Oh, no.
Yeah. And then months later, I was like, oh, yeah, I forgot about that. Let's watch that again. And I remember really enjoying it, and I feel like it ripened with time. Where, like, the more I thought about it, the more I realized just how good of a movie it was. Until come just a couple months ago when I rewatched it. And I was a bit worried that, you know, 15-year-old me's taste was a bit different than 22-year-old me's taste.
Yeah.
And that maybe it wasn't as good as I remembered, but it far exceeded even my expectations of having seen it years ago. I loved that movie. It is also probably one of my, if not my favorite movie as well. It's just such a good movie.
So putting out some context for this is Rogue One between the prequels and the original trilogy.
Though mostly closer to the original trilogy. I mean, it ends as most of you who are listening to this probably know, it ends right as A New Hope begins.
Right.
Like seconds before.
And I think that's like when I watched it the first time walking out of the theater, Brian, you probably remember this. I was livid. I was absolutely infuriated from the very beginning scene because it threw you right in without any opening crawl. But that was the first Star Wars movie that wasn't quote unquote an episode at that point. And so I think I had that very negative perspective throughout the entire movie, trying to criticize everything I possibly could.
Yeah.
There was no lightsaber battles. There was no, the what I thought was what Star Wars was at the time wasn't there. And so I was mad.
Yeah.
Until I saw it again.
Also, if I remember correctly, there's a line from Bail where he kind of switches between talking about Obi-Wan and Leia like mid-paragraph. And you thought he was still talking about Obi-Wan and had called Obi-Wan a she?
Yeah.
And you kind of really didn't like that.
I mentioned that to me multiple times
until I was like, hold up, you are not interpreting that right.
No, I totally miss. Well, I had only like seen it like once.
Yeah.
And so, yeah.
But yeah, just to add on to that, I think a lot of the Star Wars fan base, it's a very, very divisive movie. And for that exact reason, that it's not the same as what we've had before. It didn't follow the same formula as the original trilogy, the prequels, or the sequels the two sequels that had come out, or the ones, this one,
one
sequel
that had come out so far.
Which, you know, was decent.
Yeah, Force Awakens was, people didn't, from at least from my perspective, from what I saw, people didn't really start hating the sequels until 8. 7 was very much like a formulaic movie and a setup movie, and it wasn't until the setup started not paying off, but that's a different subject.
I think that's why it's so divisive. Like, even these new sequels were following that very tried and true formula that the OT and the prequels had followed, and this was just such a vast departure from that.
It
was just very divisive.
Yeah, it's a very gritty movie.
Very gritty.
You get to see, like, the rebellion is not portrayed as always the good guys. I mean, even from, like, the very opening scenes, Like, I mean, the first scene with one of Jin's parents is killed, the other is kidnapped. You get to see kind of a somewhat morally gray character, at least closer to morally gray, in Jaylen or so, and that he's the engineer for the Death Star. And then, like, the opening scene that introduces Cassian Andor is him shooting an informant because the informant is panicking and he doesn't have time to deal with it. One interesting thing I thought Rogue One did, it didn't have enough screen time to really show it, but it was just the terror of the Death Star as well. I mean, you see Alderaan blow up in A New Hope, but it's treated with a very detached.
There's no lead way. Up.
It's just done, and you don't get to see the consequences, mostly because the planet's completely blown to pieces.
Yep.
But you don't really see, because Leia's not the main focus, you don't see her dealing with grief very much. Obi-Wan's death seems to have more of an impact on the characters than the, like, maybe trillions of people who died on Alderaan.
Oh, yeah.
Whereas in Rogue One, you get to see a Death Star explosion firsthand. You get to see the terror of the rebellion as they're faced with a planet killer, as they're calling it. And at the end of the movie, the main cast, the ones who are left, die to a Death Star explosion. Not to mention the fact that a lot of main characters die. You see Galen Erso get blown up midway through the movie by rebel forces, mind you, just don't know he's there.
Here, I want to dig into that. That's such an interesting thing in the Star Wars universe. Because if you think about that, most of the effects of it's all good guy, bad guy, as we were discussing,
yeah,
how it's always Empire versus Rebels. With that, it shows the impact of collateral, of being impacted by something because the pilots had no idea and it was too late, all of this stuff that led up to the actual event. But the interesting perspective is Galen's line at the end of he keeps that optimistic perspective and keeps, mm-hmm. Okay, I put this in there. This needs to go on. And this is how the rebellion can continue to succeed. Yeah.
I mean, like the original Star Wars kind of had this more than other movies that came before them in this, as we've kind of talked about, in the sense that like it in our OT episode, but in the sense that they talk about, like, in the sense that people like Vader, it's not just good bad guys, bad guys. It's people choosing between good and evil. Rogue One takes that even farther and just throws more complications into the mix and still requires people to choose good or evil. There's also the fact that all the main characters die at the end without knowing, like, the main conflict is not really resolved. And I think it's a prequel in an anthology movie, and I think that's cool that they were willing to do that. I think that's why it succeeded over Solo. Whereas Solo felt like a random side quest, these guys directly let themselves lead up into A New Hope. And because of that, it felt high stakes. And though the ending was satisfying, the main conflict was not resolved, and they let A New Hope resolve the main conflict.
It wasn't a new conflict, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Just to add on to that, talking about that whole idea of the entire main cast dying, that's another thing that I know a lot of people either really like or really dislike, or, you know, somewhere in the between. For me, it's really bittersweet. And I think for a lot of the people that really like Rogue One, it's just such a bittersweet moment to see all these characters that you've seen grow so much throughout the movie just all go up in flames, literally.
And I think one of the interesting things that makes Rogue One different from other movies that kill their entire main cast is Rogue One actually isn't a tragedy.
Yeah.
It's they're dying, but they're dying to push the cause forward. They won't see it finished, but they're willing to sacrifice to get it closer. And I just that emotional ending, really, I really like it.
We see that in the last line of the movie, right? That, like, what does this mean? Hope. I can't remember the exact
one. There's the whole rebellions are built on hope mantra throughout the entire movie.
But it is an interesting idea that, like, the entire cast is going to die. I mean, that was kind of a constraint that had to be set out, right? Because we had the OT that was written years upon years ago. And if they were to want to try to change the canon and, you know, like, oh, these people survived, then that just wouldn't work. And so they were kind of constrained by that. And yet the director, what's
his name? Gareth Edwards.
Gareth Edwards decided to take that and run with it, it seems. He built a story that just happens to work with such a tragic and yet really hopeful ending.
As a writer, I think it's really cool how whoever wrote the script for this movie, I don't know if it's Gareth Edwards or if Gareth Edwards was just the director, but how they just embraced the constraints and used the constraints to make a compelling story. I think that was really good. I think that's why this movie succeeded, especially in comparison to like Solo, where it was, they really didn't seem to use the constraints at all. Every like backstory thing of Solo felt really thrown together. It was like, oh, this is how the Millennium Falcon has a hole in it. Oh, this is how he got his name.
Plot service.
It felt like fan service instead of an integral part of the plot. Whereas Rogue One, it was an integral part of the plot. Really, the only fan service moment in Rogue One was the hallway scene. And even that is like only borderline fan service. And it was well done. One thing I really also like about the movie that I think complements it really well is the soundtrack.
Yes.
They weren't able to get John Williams for it, probably because he was working on The Last Jedi or something, and also because he's like 90. But Michael Giacchino did a really good job, in my opinion, combining the feel of the Star Wars soundtracks with a more gritty, emotional tone. Like, Your Father Would Be Proud is one of my favorite soundtracks ever.
And I'm a big fan of the Imperial Suite.
Oh, man.
Yeah. The Imperial Suite was a really good retexture, in my opinion, of the Imperial March.
Yeah.
They also did Vader really well. I feel like that almost goes without saying, but like the hallway scene.
Yes.
let's jump into some of those scenes. Like that hallway scene was OT. It was OT Vader in a way that we've never seen him before.
Yeah. And I will say, I'm just going to give this to Disney Star Wars in general. One of the things they have done that I like, both in the Kenobi show and Rogue One, is that they have taken Vader, and because they have less limitations as far as like props and Vader, because of modern technology, Vader can now move in a way that's a lot more intimidating, and they have taken that and run with it. And though I have a lot of critiques of Disney Star Wars, I don't have a lot of critiques of the way they've done with Vader.
Now, what I'm about to say may, you know, make some Star Wars fans a bit mad, but just watching the OT pretty recently, I feel like Darth Vader isn't actually as imposing as I remember him to be. He's kind of lame, not going to lie. Yeah, he's a cool villain, but I think he just doesn't, maybe just how he's portrayed in the OT doesn't really hold up as well.
He's not imposing. He's not, really not.
But like Rogue One and other modern Disney media really does put that imposing part of Darth Vader into him.
Terrifying. Yeah, they show how Vader treats people who he does not know.
Can I bring up something else with that Darth Vader hallway scene? I just remember in episode 4, we have the original hallway scene, right? Where we have all of the rebel troopers lined up on the hallway, and then, you know, the stormtroopers come through and just destroy all of them.
Yeah.
But I feel like that doesn't have a ton of impact. It's a great.
It's just introducing
the conflict. Yeah, it's introducing the conflict. It's introducing Vader. But just something that Rogue One does so well, as we've already talked about with the fact that all the main characters die, it makes the deaths feel really impactful. As we see the Death Star plans run from person to person, from rebel to rebel, it focuses on the individual. And you see just each of them cut down as it's passed from person to person. You
see the horror of it.
You see the horror of it. It's terrifying. Yeah. And yet you just, like, it's exhilarating at the same time, because there's that whole idea of hope of these people are willing to sacrifice themselves for such a great cause.
Even this being a prequel, you're sitting there at on the edge of your seat. What the heck is going to happen? Are these plans going to actually get there? Like, and that trying to pass it between the door and all of that.
That was
like, even then I was on the edge of my seat of like, okay, if this doesn't make it, what the heck are they going to do to try to fix this? Like what's going on? I know the end result, but I was still in that.
It's like rereading a good book. You might know the end result, but it's still intense.
Exactly. Yeah. It was awesome. I think another thing that was with Rogue One is I think the entire Scarif scene, as soon as that goes into like that third act of Scarif and the entire retrieving of the plans and all of that, is something that Star Wars really hadn't had very much of before. Was down in the dirt, gritty warfare.
Yeah.
Yeah. But at the same time, you're still seeing like what we talked about. It's down in the dirt, gritty, but you're seeing like the rebellion rallying together for like kind of the first time. I haven't seen Rebels. I'm sure they probably did have some moments in Rebels, but beyond Rebels, this is kind of the first rallying scene for the rebellion where they've kind of decided that they're taking a side. I mean, they've taken a side before, but they've decided it more firmly now.
Well, that's even in the movie when they can't even decide to take action to go attack Scarif. They're all separate and they we can't do anything because we're not united on our same objective.
Yeah.
They jump in and okay, somebody's already taken the first step. This is our choice to let them die and maybe not get and finish it out or go with it.
One of my favorite quotes from the movies is Jin as they're landing. We'll take the next chance and the next, all until we succeed or we run out of chances.
Which is an awesome perspective. Just going into the moralistic part of this entire show of building up on hope, even though when things suck and all of that, it's keep just going with it. Going with what you have, not being sucked down by things hitting you over and over and over again. You got to move forward with what you've got, which is an awesome moral for such well, we mentioned it's not such a tragedy, but it is, it's tragic.
Yeah.
And this rebellion is being squashed over and over by this imposing force.
Something I think about a lot as a writer is contrast. Contrasting victorious moments feel victorious because you've seen the character have to struggle for it.
Indeed.
Stormlight is really good at this. Rogue One is also really good at this. Pretty much every really good thing that I enjoy because of the contrast.
Yeah. Speaking of that contrast, just to talk about those characters that you see their struggle and then seeing them overcome it. I'd like to, before we go back to the combat, I'd like to talk about Jyn Erso for a second. Just her as, like, you know, the main character.
Yeah.
Like, yeah, there's Andor and there are others, but I just love Jyn Erso. I really think she's just such a great main character. And that whole idea of that struggle, you know, and then just seeing her victorious at the end. And I just think that they did such a good job with her to the point that when you see her die, it's sad, but like, it's also just super satisfying. Not to see her die, but like, just such a good end to her arc.
Yeah. I mean, character development is one of the things people criticize about this movie sometimes. I think there's some validity to that simply because it's a 2-hour movie and there's a pretty extensive main cast. There's just not enough screen time to do what they wanted to do and still get in enough character development.
Yeah.
About another half hour, I feel like you really could have done better. But the character development they did do is great. Like, especially Jyn Erso's moment where she sees the hologram of her father, I think is a really great moment for her character. Scene.
Yeah, that overall contrast, I agree that Jyn Erso is a fantastic character. And like, if they were to do a TV series, like when they announced that they were doing a Rogue One-esque TV series, and I was like, but it would be cool, but she already has a movie, so I guess that kind of doesn't work. But that's kind of what I wanted, because she had development. But that contrast of being a smothered character of just, once again, impressed by the Empire, and kind of being formed into what the Empire wanted of just being suppressed and just absolutely submissive, and then come turning into that rebellious leader in the end of that transition of seeing her father and seeing her father put in these steps of such a role model for her, then moving on to seeing her father die, moving on with that into building a team, even against orders when she didn't even want to be there. She's like, well, go take me back to this, my prison cell. I'd rather be there and be done with it, not be.
Yeah.
But that overall arc, I think, is very interesting. Of every single one of those characters have a reprogramming of sorts, which is kind of a sub theme of that movie, of that change in perspective.
Yeah.
K2SO has a full reprogramming down to Andor. Even though we have the TV series now, he was about to shoot Galen and be done because that was his orders and that was what he thought was right. But then he checked himself and helped put together the team. Even Bodhi Rook, the Imperial pilot, has this change in perspective of becoming a rebel of, he's been assisting the Empire for so long and then trying to now help the rebellion.
And his name is evading me, but the guy with the machine gun when Chet dies.
Yeah.
He at first he's just kind of along for the ride, but by the end he just, after Chet dies, he sacrifices himself to take out some Death Troopers for the other guys on the ground.
Yeah. Down to Chirrut. Yeah. It's like the overall cast is just a constant change of characters. So I completely disagree with them. Yeah, you could have had more development, more intricacies, but I think the overall arc was beautiful.
Yeah.
Very hopeful and very amazing.
I think so. I don't think every single main character, you know, had the biggest arc. I mean, the blind Force user's name?
Chirrut.
Chirrut.
It's not Chet. Chirrut. I have been reading Defiant. That is why I thought that.
Yeah, don't worry about it. I may love this movie. I don't remember the name of every single person, not going to lie. They had one movie, but Chirrut, like, he's pretty static, right? It's just forces with me. I'm one with the Force. He just trusts in that throughout the entire movie until he dies.
Yeah.
And his minigun wielding friend is pretty static until the end there. But then, yeah, Jyn Erso's arc, I honestly think, is really well done. And so is Andor's. Like, maybe they didn't have the most time to develop those arcs, but overall they are really well done, and it makes their deaths feel worth it and make it feel like they had a real impact.
Yeah.
Makes you care.
I also think it's an interesting trope. Let's go to director Krennic, of his perspective of just trying to get up the rung to the next rung. And,
yeah. Which is kind of the way the Imperials feel the entire movie. Granted, we mostly see it from Krennic's point of view, but I mean, you see the scientists, except Galen, they all die.
Yeah.
Because of Krennic. Tarkin is basically doing the same thing to Krennic that Krennic is doing to everyone else.
Yeah, even Tarkin is trying to get up to the next rung and just try to get a better up into
he's just
Grand Moff territory.
Tarkin's entire thing in that is he's basically trying to keep Krennic down.
Mm-hmm.
And Krennic's whole thing is that he's super ambitious. I think it's just a very interesting contrast to the rebellion, where we do get to see the more human side of the Empire a little bit in this, not quite as much as in like Andor.
Instead of like a shapeless organization,
but we still get like the there's still a defined contrast between the motives of the rebellion and the motives of the Empire.
And even being blown up by his own weapon, I think, is
hilarious.
It's ironic, but it's interesting in his arc of like everything that he fought for, everything that he was shooting for, everything that he was doing. Over and over, he keeps getting tripped up and ends up dying on the place he's trying to protect, by the weapon he's trying to protect the plans for, all by the person that's trying to keep him
Like all ambitious people who are completely driven by ambition, his ambition eventually consumes him.
Yeah. And it's satisfying. It really is.
It really is.
Yeah. But
speaking of Tarkin, random comment. Everybody kind of rats on Tarkin's CGI. I think it's great.
I think it was fantastic.
I really don't think it's that bad. It's very... If you're going to rat on CGI, go to episode 9, where they wouldn't even... They just...
Go to Leia in Rogue One, for Pete's sake, if you're going to rat on the CGI in Rogue
One. Actually, I don't... I think
she's not
Leia in Rogue One is
she's
fine.
Not, she's not garbage, but she's okay.
It's more noticeable. There's technological, I think Tarkin is actually really well done.
There's technological limitations, but...
Yeah.
You can it still felt like Tarkin and Leia.
You can. So. And they do great. I love Tarkin. Tarkin's a great character.
Yeah. Well, that's
I think he was wearing slippers in Rogue One.
Now that's an Easter egg. Okay. But yeah, like, it's back again to the advancements that it was another passion project, I think.
Yeah.
You could tell, which is something that is ignored so much in modern Hollywood, is just cranking out movies trying to print money.
Yep.
But ignoring the actual passion that fuels great projects and great, man, that brings in the money is your actual passion of that. They were developing that CGI of up to the point that they have it now, which is incredible. It's a lot better now than it was 10 years ago. But anyway,
I feel old thinking that 2016 is 8 years ago. Even through the production, just the message of passion and hope and all that bleeds through.
You leave that movie being like, okay, I can take on another day, which is a good perspective of. I think that's what, George Lucas said is like, this is based off of family and to invoke hope and to continue forward. So I think that continues that.
The biggest takeaway from this movie.
The rebellions are built on hope.
Yep.
All right. Well, thank you all for listening. And remember, rebellions are built on hope.